Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford. He's Wes Hodkowitz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, a quick injury update here for Packers-Texans on Sunday. We heard from Mike McCarthy on Wednesday that neither the hamstring injury for Aaron Rodgers nor the shoulder injury for Clay Matthews would keep them out of action. It sounds like both are expected to play on Sunday at Lambeau Field. But we then heard from Clay Matthews in the locker room on Wednesday afternoon. He talked about the hit that he took from Alan Barber. And at first he wasn't going to say a whole lot, and he didn't actually say a whole lot about it, but he did call it a cheap shot.
He did, and to quote Clay Matthews correctly here, I'm going to make sure I don't take anything out of context. His answer to that was, I wasn't a fan of it. I've got a lot more to say about it, but I'm going to say it behind closed doors. And as you wrote on Packers.com, he said it anyway. Cheap shot, but it is what it is. I ate it. Wasn't sure if it was legal. Wasn't really, he said he's not a quarterback. Obviously, he's been on the receiving side of that before in terms of getting the flag for drawing unnecessary roughness. So
right.
Whatever the case may be, this is something now that, you know, Matthews, he's going to play through it. He's going to grit through it. I thought that was really the biggest thing we heard this week from Mike McCarthy, is just how impressed he was that Matthews was able to finish that game with it. And now there's five straight weeks here to end the regular season and, you know, for the Packers' sake, hopefully a postseason beyond that. So this is going to be a challenge for Matthews, no question.
Yeah, I think this raises an interesting question, though, because according to the letter of the law, I looked up the rule on blindside blocks, and a blindside block is only illegal if the initial contact on the block is to the head or neck area.
Yeah.
Now, it clearly wasn't. So according to the way the rule is written, it's legal. But you just wonder, in this player safety era, we've seen college football come up with a targeting rule that leads to penalties, and in college it leads to ejections. I just wonder if the NFL, when you look at a play like this and other plays that have happened throughout the course of the year, the way Matthews, the hit on Matthews was unnecessary. Clearly, when you look at the play and the way it unfolded, it didn't have to go down like that. So you just wonder, at least I do, if the NFL somewhere along the line here is going to try to devise a targeting rule of some sort, put their own language to it, not necessarily copy the college one, but some sort of a targeting rule that will try to take plays like this out of the game.
Well, Mark Murphy, Packers president and CEO, he's a member of the competition committee, and you know, every year at the owners' meetings we're talking about these different measures that are being put in place in terms of player safety. I have to imagine that play is something that, I don't know who brings it up or how it gets brought to the table, but people are going to look at, because let's be honest, and as you just alluded to, if that was a fullback that was making the block on Matthews there, that could have been the pass protecting running back. If anybody just gets a little bit of a nudge on Matthews there, they're going to disrupt the play.
They're going to do their job. Yeah.
You know, leveling him the way that he was leveled on that play didn't stop Matthews from making the play. If Alan Barber would have stood in front of him, it would have stopped Matthews from making the play.
Right.
Now, I get it. It's professional football. You have to be able to, you know, you're thinking every play, what do I have to do to fulfill my assignment to make sure that the play is successful? I just look at it, though, from a point in perspective of defenselessness. And to me, with Matthews not seeing that Barber was going to be there, it does open up this window here of, okay, what constitutes a defenseless player? Because for that perspective, Matthews, I mean, he came out of this with a shoulder injury, but that could have been a lot worse.
Yeah, it definitely could have been. Certainly Packers fans remember back to the hit by Warren Sapp on Chad Clifton back in the early 2000s that very easily could have ended Clifton's career. And fortunately, and to Clifton's credit, it did not. And he went on to a very long and successful career as a left tackle for the Packers. But yeah, these are the kinds of things, and, you know, the league is so hypersensitive right now about player safety and whatnot, and I know a lot of that is focused around concussions and head injuries, and that's the way a lot of the rules are written, which is why this particular hit was not illegal based on the way the rule is written.
Right.
But if they're really out to protect the safety of the players, this is definitely something that needs to be looked at.
I think so. And those end-arounds, you know, things can happen, obviously. It's a unique play. There's a lot of different moving parts to it. You get really a lot of jumbled, you know, personnel, whether in its regards to the defensive backs closing in, the linebackers trying to tackle, the offensive linemen get out in front of the play. So there's a lot of different factors going on in that. It's not your traditional, you know, power play up the middle. So there's things you have to take into account for that. But at the same time, I just think that if the shoe were on the other foot, I'm guessing the Philadelphia Eagles wouldn't have been pleased. You know, Alan Barber from the sidelines wouldn't have been pleased if they would have seen a Packers offensive lineman do that to one of their guys. It's just the way that it is, and it's something that they're going to have to think about. And again, it's plays like these, you know, despite having 100 years of professional football and, you know, in this new era of player safety, there's always something new developing in the NFL, and there's always things that have to be looked at. And it's the adaptability of it is also one of its best strengths. So we'll have to see what happens.
Yeah, for sure. Well, with that, we'll throw it to our first break, and we'll be back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here, Wes Hodkiewicz there. And Wes, I wanted to talk a little bit about a player on the Packers who is slowly but surely, and maybe fastly but surely, gaining cult hero status amongst the fan base. He wears number 22, he plays fullback, he has a beard, and the fans love everything about this guy, Aaron Ripkowski. And I think he enhanced his cult hero status on Monday night in Philadelphia by scoring his first rushing touchdown and putting a pretty emphatic spike of the ball there in the Lincoln Financial Field end zone.
Yeah, and you know, the thing about Ripkowski, he's such a level-headed guy when you talk to him. Not a whole lot of emotion, you know, pretty even-keeled. And even seeing him when he scored, it was almost, he said he didn't have anything planned. So he was just sort of standing there with the ball a little bit, and teammates were congratulating him. And I don't know who it was. He didn't say who it was that finally said, I mean, spike it or something. Spike it, spike it. And finally, it was just almost like, okay, all right, cool. Like the little kid who gets in the end zone, you give him the thumbs up to start celebrating.
Yeah.
Just tosses it down. But, I mean, this is the thing. I mean, we've been talking about it all season. Aaron Ripkowski, there's a reason why the Packers went ahead with the way they did with their plans at fullback this season. They saw a lot in him during his rookie season. He's a young man. He's really powerful. As we've seen in some of those runs that he's had, and
no question,
some of the times when you get him the ball in space, he's tough to bring down. So the cult hero status, it's always been there. I think there's an appreciation for the fullback position in Green Bay. William Henderson had it. John Kuhn had it.
Yep, for sure.
And now with Ripkowski, he's kind of carrying on that fraternity.
Yeah, I give Ripkowski a lot of credit because he is the guy who is, you know, moving into the shoes of a guy like Kuhn, who is so popular, right, and had, you know, the chant of his last name from the fans at Lambeau Field and everything. And Ripkowski, right from the beginning, and he was like, hey, I'm going to try to learn as much from this guy as I can, but I can't be John Kuhn necessarily. I have to do, you know, what I do best. And as we've seen, I think the Packers have shown that he can actually do more than he did when he was in college at Oklahoma. He hardly ever carried the ball,
right,
or caught a pass. He was really mostly a blocking specialist, and I don't even think he played that much special teams in college,
no,
if I recall. So his role here in the NFL is widely expanded over what he did in college, which is kind of rare, really.
Yeah, he was really specialized at Oklahoma, and they respected him for it. I mean, he obviously, I think he was an award winner there. I forget which award that was, but for, like, basically the best walk-on that's come through the program.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, he's really, he endeared himself to that fan base, and now coming to Green Bay, Mike McCarthy talked about it, how, you know, they expected him to do a lot of the things he's done in terms of the fullback position, the power, even being able to carry the ball. The biggest surprise for the Packers was what he does do on special teams and the various amount of ways that they can use him. The fullback, and they brought another one on board now, Joe Carriage, that position is a lot like the tight end position and how versatile it can be for special teams. So for the Packers to get that amount of really snaps and workload out of Ripkowski. I mean, John Kuhn did a lot of things for the Packers over a number of years, and my guess he'll someday be in the Packers Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
But towards the end of his career, he really wasn't playing on that many special teams units. Well, now with Ripkowski, when you're not having 30, 40 snaps a game at the fullback position, he gives you that added dimension in the other phase.
Yeah, for sure. And the fact that he got a rushing touchdown, obviously a lot's been made of the fact that he's the first Packer to get a rushing touchdown other than quarterback Aaron Rodgers this year. So that certainly helps. he can potentially be a goal line back here going forward. And Rodgers even joked on Wednesday in the locker room that, okay, now somebody other than Aaron, somebody other than the name of Aaron, needs to get a rushing touchdown now to share the wealth a little bit.
Yeah, and it was interesting. You've heard Rodgers talking about Ripkowski all season. And again, on Wednesday, credibly really selling and putting over Ripkowski, and not only just for his work ethic and what he's done in terms of the opportunities he's had, but really his natural athleticism. I think that's the thing that's gotten overlooked a lot with Ripkowski, is that, well, he's a try-hard guy. I think there's a lot of ability in him, and that's the reason why the Packers used a sixth-round pick on him. It was the first time since, I think, Quinn Johnson, 2009, that they'd use a draft pick on the fullback position.
That's right.
So there's ability with this kid. Rodgers sees it. He's really really touting it. And when you lose John Kuhn, when you lose that guy that had been such a contributor, somebody that had earned and developed Rodgers' trust for so many years, to have Ripkowski come in and get that kind of recommendation off the bat, I think speaks to what he's done so far.
Yeah, I'm hearing the same kind of thing from Rodgers, in that he's saying Aaron Ripkowski is not just an effort guy and a grunt guy and a nose to the grindstone guy. There's some talent here in this football player, and I think the Packers are really making the most of that talent. As we've talked about, he's doing so much more for this team in terms of the varied roles than he did in college. And kudos to the Packers scouting staff for finding this guy and spending a sixth round pick on him, but then also for his own dedication and development to, you know, go outside the box a little bit, you might say. He was actually more of a defensive end and linebacker, I believe, in high school, than became a fullback in college. He's doing so much more on the football field than he's ever done. It's fun to watch.
And keep this in mind, too. The Packers, he was one of their pre-draft visits in 2015, one of the 30 official visits that they get. They did their research on Ripkowski. They knew he was going to be a player, and here he is now having this kind of success. And maybe very soon, Mike, people start developing a nickname for him.
Yeah, somebody's got to come up with that. I'm not sure what it not sure what it is yet. Nothing seems to roll off the tongue as far as 70,000 people chanting it. But we'll see how that unfolds. And with that, we'll throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, I know we've talked about number 17, Davante Adams, a lot already this season, but the discussion is certainly warranted with the way he's playing. Another 100-yard game on Monday night in Philadelphia. One of the things being bandied about in the media is this issue of, is Davante Adams the Packers' number one receiver, or is he a number one receiver in terms of how he's labeled in the NFL? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I wrote about this in the Packers, our insider inbox earlier this week. I've never really subscribed to this number one receiver thing, personally. I have no problem with people that think it's cool. But, I mean, I think it's a fantasy football thing.
Yeah, I agree with you.
It's about, okay, and I listen to it too. I play fantasy football. Is this guy an RB2? Is he RB3? Is he a flex? That's language that people use. But in terms of quantifying it in an NFL football game, I don't think there's a place for it, because you really doesn't matter. As Davante Adams said, when you have Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, and Davante Adams, who's the number one there?
Yeah.
Anybody can go off on any given day. Everybody could go off on any given day. And the best point I thought he made during the 17 minutes that he spoke to the media on Wednesday was the fact that you go back to his rookie season in 2014, when he had his marquee games that season against the New England Patriots, against the Dallas Cowboys in the playoffs. He wasn't the number one receiver.
Right.
Like, you couldn't even make the argument then. But based on the matchups, based on the opponent, based on the flow of the game, that's how it worked out. It's all about opportunities in this offense. We've heard about it for as long as Edgar Bennett and Mike McCarthy have been running this thing. And as far as these receivers are concerned, there isn't a whole lot of really important reasoning for defining who's the number one.
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest things, is that these receivers, this receiving core for the Packers, they don't care about those labels and numbers and whatnot. And I think we've seen over the years, and this year included, when the Packers offense is at its best is when you go into a game and somebody maybe that you don't even necessarily expect to be the standout guy is the guy. You know, we saw it earlier in the season with Ty Montgomery. We saw it with Jared Cook in Washington.
First game back.
You know, Davante Adams has been that guy a couple times. Jordy Nelson's obviously been that guy a couple times. You've had some good games from Randall Cobb. You know, this offense is at its best when those guys are somewhat taking their turns, and it's random, and it needs to be random because that's what the matchups are all about.
And I was talking with Aaron Rodgers about this earlier this season for a story that we did in terms of him and Jordy Nelson. You know, they're the longest duo right now in the NFL that have run concurrently with each other. And I thought something that Rodgers said was really important. He's that Jordy Nelson has kind of set the tempo for that room, and he's never been a guy. This is coming off that game. I think we had one catch for 9 yards.
Yeah.
I was that against Chicago?
Something like that, yeah.
He was just as happy for Davante Adams and Ty Montgomery and the other guys that did get those opportunities. And you know what happened right after that? He ended up having this string of like 6 consecutive games with 90 receiving yards now, at least. Nobody pipes up. Nobody says, I'm not getting enough opportunities. Because with Aaron Rodgers as your quarterback, you're going to get the opportunities. I think everybody understands that. And I think Davante Adams has really fit into that room well because of it. And the understanding that the opportunities are going to be there. You're going to get your chance. Make the most of it. The numbers will come. The production will come. And you guys can talk about all the numbers and whatever externally. Internally, that isn't what counts.
Yeah, for sure, and that's it's a tight knit group that receiving group, and it's good to see. But before we go to a break, Wes, we'll take care of some sponsor business here at home or in the stands. We all know that Green Bay fans give it their all, and that takes a lot of energy. So grab a warm bowl of Campbell's Chunky Soup. Its meaty goodness fuels the greatness of Packers fans everywhere. Try the delicious Chunky Chicken Broccoli Cheese. Just visit your local supermarket retailer and ask for Campbell's Chunky Soup, the hearty way to fuel your game and the official soup partner of the Green Bay Packers. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford, joined by Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, every once in a while, we deviate from our usual NFL path and talk a little college football. And with what's going to be decided this coming weekend with the college football playoff, these conference championship games, there's a lot to get figured out and a lot of potential controversy being stirred up here. With where things stand, what's your take?
Well, I'm not the most educated person to be speaking on this, but I'm really conflicted as just a casual, you know, college football fan, because the whole point of the Big Ten championship game when they came up with the idea 5 years ago was to bring more national notoriety, was to obviously bring more enthusiasm and really be able to find a champion to put forth as this is our, you know, best candidate for a national championship or whatever. They're in an interesting position now where you have Wisconsin and Penn State, who are both very capable teams, are behind two teams that are not in the Big Ten championship game. So what happens if Penn State wins? What happens if Wisconsin wins? How do you figure all that out? The only thing I feel really strongly about, in my opinion, is I'm really hoping that Colorado wins the Pac championship, because Washington didn't play anybody. And there's a real legitimate chance that they're going to be in the Final Four. And it's not to say and not take anything away from Washington. They're an excellent football team.
Yeah.
But they didn't play anybody.
Yeah.
And yet they're going to be rewarded for it.
Yeah, and that's the one thing. I give Wisconsin a shot still to get into the playoff if they're able to beat Penn State and win the Big Ten championship, because the committee has talked about rewarding teams for their schedule. And Wisconsin played LSU here at Lambeau Field to open the season. That's a non-conference game that a lot of programs aren't interested in taking on. And the Badgers took that on, and they won that game. I think that potentially could be – they need to win against Penn State, obviously. Don't get me wrong there. But the other thing – I feel like the committee contradicts itself sometimes. I'll say that, because they've got Michigan at number 5. Michigan's lost 2 of its last 3 games. And I understand you're giving Michigan some credit for how they lost. They lost on a last-second field goal at Iowa. They lost in double overtime to Ohio State. But then I think the committee also needs to take into account how teams win games. And I've been saying this for a while. Clemson on October 15th, which was my birthday, by the way.
Happy birthday.
They should have lost to North Carolina State, a team that's sub 500 in the ACC. It was a chip shot field goal on the last play of regulation. The NC State kicker flat out blew it. Clemson wins that game in overtime, a game they should not have won. Yet, because they only have one loss, that's why they are where they are. Whereas Wisconsin's 2 losses are to Michigan and Ohio State, and Wisconsin is 6 right now. To me, it's a contradiction in terms of how the committee is looking at things.
No, you bring up a great point, Mike. I mean, it is. That's always going to be the – we're going to be splitting hairs here no matter what we
right.
do.
Absolutely.
Obviously, if you're not Alabama, there's always going to be questions here, you know, with the season that they had, although they could lose their championship game and probably still be in this thing, obviously. So,
I think they will be, yeah. I think that's one where you could definitely make that argument.
They just separated themselves right. you know, too much from the rest of the pack. But what's interesting to me now, when you look at how this is going to shuffle out, is Ohio State's put themselves in a position to be in it. You know, I don't disagree with that. But the way that this has played out in the Big Ten, it works against the committee because none of it really makes sense. You have Penn State got blew up by Michigan. Penn State beat Ohio State. Iowa beat Michigan. Like, there's a lot of things that were kind of nonsensical, whereas where you mentioned Clemson was able to hold off NC State, well, that's convenient.
Right.
They now can overlook that. They don't have to acknowledge that. Michigan held off Michigan State. How does that change things if Michigan State ends up, you know, not going for two, ties it, and finds a way to win it in overtime?
Ohio State, Michigan
Ohio
State, you're
State,
talking
sorry,
about.
Yes,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Those type of things are kind of where this is at right now in terms of how this is going to play out. Who you factor into it. The one thing I'll say for Wisconsin's sake is you said rewarding a team for its schedule. Nobody gave Wisconsin a shot this year.
No,
everybody
absolutely
thought
not.
They'd lose to LSU. Everybody thought they'd get blown up by Michigan and Ohio State. They didn't win those games, but they stayed in them.
Yeah, for sure. And it's interesting because I don't have a problem with Ohio State being in the playoff, even though they're not in the Big Ten championship. They have one loss. Their only loss was a blocked field goal, run back for a touchdown late in the fourth quarter against Penn State. That's the only game they lost. But at the same time, the best thing to happen to Ohio State is that they're not in the Big Ten championship because they don't have to play right. another game. They don't have to risk another loss. The best thing that happened to them is that Penn State ended up getting into that conference championship, and that's what makes the whole thing amazing. Mess, but we got to go. So we'll call that a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the Team account. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.